Hey, everybody, it's Ken and John.
Before we start the show, we just wanted to make sure you heard on our last show the change in Omnibus. No change at all to you, the listener. The show's still delightful. The show's still free. But the show is now independent.
We are independent of our corporate masters. We have we pulled the ripcord.
That doesn't mean it's scary for us, but it means nothing to you, except that if you would like to join us on our journey and support the new independent Omnibus, you can now do so through the funding mechanism of Patreon.
Our Patreon account is patreon.com/omnibusproject. You can go there and join at several different tiers.
Different perks and privileges are in the works. For now, we just appreciate you early adopters who are hopping aboard with faith that the new independent Omnibus that we're building is going to be cool.
Yeah. My operating principle is always donate at the level that makes you slightly uncomfortable about the amount of your contribution.
Thank you for your support of the new independent Omnibus. The adventure is just beginning. Unless the cataclysm comes.
Bum, bum, bum.
Receiving this message.
We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 537.PS2103, certificate number 23490. Gold hats.
Perhaps one of the more peculiar, visually impressive, yet suspiciously little-known ancient golden artifact has to be the Berlin Golden Hat. And although, predictably, a rather mundane modern history has been attached to it, we believe there is substantial evidence to suggest it is in fact an upart, an out-of-place artifact. Supposedly, according to the academics, it is a late Bronze Age artifact, somehow made during this era from incredibly thin gold leaf. Could this hat perhaps be more historically valuable than we are being led to believe?
Gold hats!
Then wear the gold hat, if that moves her.
Go back to those gold hats.
If you can bounce, how bounce for her, too.
I was in Berlin this summer for the first time.
Humble brag.
What's the humble part? I was built.
Oh, the
I was,
first time.
I was building orphanages in Berlin. Oh, yeah, the first time, I see. I'm sure you've been to Berlin. Berlin's a big rock city.
Yeah, I've been to Berlin a lot.
Steeped in musical history. Bowie and Lou Reed.
I was in Berlin in 89 when the wall came down. I was there for that event.
You just happened to be passing through?
So I'd gone to East Berlin that summer and done the whole thing, you know, gone through Checkpoint Charlie and
you were selling secrets to the Russians.
I was selling secrets to the Russians. I had the microfiche in the hat band.
What
of my
was your what was your code name?
Eggs.
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 So all those communiques that say it's time to scramble eggs.
Yeah,
that's you.
Are we gonna get some eggs today? Yeah, go get a dozen eggs.
So your code name is a dozen eggs?
No, eggs.
Okay, it's just eggs.
But my handler was Scottish, and he pronounced it eggs.
So you had eggs. You had a Scotch egg.
But then I was still in Europe. I was in Florence, or Firenze.
We call it Firenze.
And I picked up a copy of the International Herald Tribune one morning as I was sitting having my
this is a very late 80s story.
Digestif. And it said something's, you know, like, it's crazy. The Hungarians are
There's a doings a transpiring.
Over here, there's this and that.
It started when Hungary and some of these other countries said, we're a little soft on the Warsaw Pact from the beginning, let's be honest.
We're not
100% sold on Stalinism, weirdos. they opened their borders and started to let people out.
Opened-ish their borders, yeah. But then Honecker started to teeter, and I was at the time, and this is terrible, I don't mean to say this, I don't mean to encourage people to engage in this kind of behavior. But at the time, I was traveling on a forged Ural pass, which is to say a Ural pass that that an unscrupulous person in Amsterdam had treated with disappearing ink potion.
To get rid of the other guy's name or whatever?
And then changed the dates and the name. And it was a 3-month Ural pass. And I think I was dealing in underground economies.
I wish some gendarme or carabinieri had spotted your forgery and said, Señor Rodrigo, you're arrested. And it's like E-U-R arrested.
Oh, you're arrested.
Wouldn't that be good?
It was a thing where I was traveling with two other people, and we did get, I think at some point in Denmark, pulled off the train, and the inspector waved these Ural passes under my travel companions' noses and said, these are such obvious forgeries, you know, you're going to jail tonight. And then he handed mine back. Oh, and it was a 3-month first class Ural pass.
You got greedy.
I'd paid this guy a little extra. He handed me back mine and said, yours is obviously fine.
You're free to go.
You're free to go. But your two friends are with me.
Check your privilege, John. And I check was your like, good forgery privilege.
I was like, those aren't friends of mine. See you suckers later. But so
they're still rotting in some jail in Denmark.
They are. They're on a different kind of Pineapple Express.
So you're in Firenze.
So I had no luggage or ties to anyone or anywhere, kind of like now. And so I threw my International Herald Tribune down on the cafe table and
upsetting your espresso
and, you know, threw a couple of lire on the table and marched quick step over to the train station and got on the overnight train to Berlin and woke up the next morning and the wall was open.
So were you there that night when they were knocking off masonry?
I was there with
you brought your hammer.
A hammer.
From Florence.
It was a thing where the feeling, the vibe in the town was so crazy. I went over to Brandenburg Gate and the crowds were massing on the wall and somebody lifted me up and then I was up there and somebody handed me a hammer.
You're crowd surfing on the wall.
It was incredible. I mean, it was incredible. It was a singular event.
I had many, you know, a lot of Berlin tourism today is still wall centric because people our age who can afford to travel are fascinated by that era. Our kids had no idea. We had to keep explaining the Berlin Wall to them. But a lot of the tourism is wall-centric, and so you see these videos, and they're still extremely moving to see these young, hopeful people think that their gray Honecker world is going to get better.
I have
happy Honecker.
I have a couple of shards of the wall here that I chipped off with my own little borrowed hammer.
We have some in our house as well because Mindy, my wife, was living in Berlin, not in 89 when the wall came down, but before reunification. Her dad was a diplomat and moved there in, I think, early 1990, late 89, early 90. And they lived in the East because, you know, Bonn was still the capital of West Germany. If you were a U.S. diplomat, you lived in East Berlin.
Right.
So their house was, a former Stasi listening post.
Oh, isn't that awesome?
She said. And the upside, I don't know if there's any downside, honestly, to living in a former Stasi listening post. But the real advantage is that she said every room had like so many phone jacks. Like no matter where you want to put a phone, like each room had like 6 phone jacks on each wall. So it was awesome.
But I loved Berlin and the Long Winters played there many times. And there was a time where I thought that I might move there because it was so cheap to live and you could get such wonderful apartments for next to nothing. And it was a place that was attracting artists from all over Europe, young people that wanted to go live cheaply and make crazy art. So it had the feel on the streets was really exciting.
this was Mindy's first time back, and as you can imagine, it was pretty different in 2019 than 1990. I bet the cheap rents are gone.
Well, even from 2012 to 2019, it's changed a lot.
We ended up staying right in Potsdamer Platz, which, if you've seen Wim Wenders' Wings of Desire, it was where the wall went down, and it was a big hole in the ground. And suddenly that was the most desirable real estate in Berlin, because there was all, you know, now, so now it's all these massive, it's kind of their Times Square with these massive malls and shopping complexes. And
what's crazy about Berlin is that the eastern side of it was less bomb damaged.
Yeah.
And so a lot of what we think of as the kind of glitzy, mid-century modern kind of garbage of central West Berlin is just because that's where most of the devastation happened. And East Berlin had a lot more buildings that survived.
World War II is why Berlin is not as charming as Paris or, you know, pretty much any other European capital. It's, you know, nothing against Berlin, 'cause it's our fault. It's not our fault. nobody.
Where are you gonna
we
put
didn't
blame?
Make anyone invade Sudetenland and Poland. But it was our bombs, at least.
The British did quite a bit of bombing. And, of course, the Soviets shelled Berlin into submission as well.
And then everybody had a piece. Pretty awful during the occupation.
Really, but only the French didn't have anything to do with it.
Why did the French even get a quarter of these cities? Like, they're barely a country at that point. It's like Charles de Gaulle in an office in London with two assistants. And he's like, yeah, can we have a quarter of Berlin and Vienna? And they're like, yeah.
Even in 1982, I was thinking about this the other day. Even in 82, it still was true. If you were on a college prep trajectory in public high school in Anchorage, Alaska, you took French because that was the language of the cultured It was college
like in international elite. Diplomacy, right? You imagine people at the UN speaking French to each other.
No one born after 1978 can possibly conceive of a time when, in even recently, France was considered in the upper rank of global nations.
My son chose French over Spanish and Chinese and other more relevant 21st century options, and I'm not sure why, but it might be culinary.
He's a fancy boy.
It might be the rise of foodie culture, I think. The last place where French is kind of relevant and top tier.
French has helped me.
When you name sauces.
Over the years, it's because when you go to Africa, you realize that French is still the lingua franca of large parts of...
Shouldn't France be the lingua franca of every place?
Interesting.
Latin for...
The French language.
Or does lingua franca just mean the very frank language, like swearing?
The language of the Franks.
Pardon my French. But it's true. Standing at the top of the Berlin, we were on the dome on the top of the Berlin Cathedral, and northeast Berlin, straight into the former East Berlin, is the only place where you see kind of charming old-timey garreted roofs and nice architecture. But speaking of that part of Berlin, right next to the cathedral is Museum Island, which is the massive museum complex. Berlin, you know, maybe charmless in certain architectural ways, but culturally hard to beat.
Yeah, there's a lot happening.
Amazing art and music and everything else. And in this remarkable museum complex, we accidentally just showed up on the Saturday morning. They were opening kind of the equivalent of the I.M. Pei Louvre Pyramid,
right,
on Museum Island. So it's a new kind of tourism access point from which you can access all the museums. We just heard like a marching band and we're like, oh, Germany, chill out.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, there was a guy in a tuba.
Boom, boom, boom.
And so we went to a cafe in the Neues Museum, not realizing that a nice newer cafe had like just opened hours ago on the terrace. And it started to pour rain after we had eaten our strudel. So we're kind of wandering around the Neues Museum, and in a weird corner room, a dimly lit corner room, there is really nothing but one of the highlights of this museum, apparently, a spotlight pointed down on this single golden cone.
A golden cone.
Imagine, if you will, it's an ice cream cone turned upside down.
Dig, if you will, this picture.
About 3 feet tall. And with a little kind of a foot or a brim. Wait, at the bottom.
3 feet tall?
Did I not say that part? Imagine an ice cream cone, but also it's what? Like you're a midget. You're like a Lilliputian.
Wow. So it's like I had a picture that it was like, well, a hat. And then as you started to describe it, I was like, is it like a cone head?
What is the tallest hat you own?
I have a drum major's,
like a Shaco
hat from a 1950s marching band.
Is this a sex thing?
Juggalos.
Where do you wear the?
I wear it around. Yeah, it's a thing. It's part of my dominant and submissive sex cult that I'm a member of. I wear the drum major hat. And
is that dominant or submissive?
Well, it depends. It depends on the...
Depends on if you're a clarinetist or a...
Is it Thursday night or Sunday
tuba
night?
Tuba player, I guess.
And then my companion would be dressed as an elf, obviously. It stands to reason.
Yeah, the eternal struggle between drum majors and elves.
But this is a... This is a ridiculously tall hat.
3 feet is pretty tall for a hat. And the brim at the bottom kind of gives it the impression that it's some kind of maybe wizard or witch hat, which is not too far from the truth. So I began to read why there is this giant golden hat in this room. It turns out this is one of the great mysteries in archaeology right now. This thing is a real oddity. It's one of the prizes of this museum, the famous Berlin gold hat. But there are three...
They don't have a better name for it than hat?
Yeah, what would you go with?
It's just
not really...
Do you want to
pitch something?
I don't think of it. It doesn't look like a hat.
Well, because it's kind of peaked, you can't use any of the cooler names. It's not a helm or a crown.
Is it a headdress? It's not really a...
It doesn't have feathers or anything. Like, you're really just wearing an extremely tall hat.
Is this the golden hat of Schifferstadt?
No, the golden hat of Schifferstadt was the first of these discovered. It's now on display in Speyer.
Why is it not called... A gold cone. I guess a cone doesn't describe that it's meant to be worn as a hat, does it?
Well, maybe it was called the gold cone at first because it was not at first clear to anyone what these things were for.
When they were found, did someone not immediately try it on? It seems like what I would have done.
It was not found with a head in it. Yeah. It was not found with anybody wearing it. There have been four of these found all over Central Europe. Some of them from as far west as West Central France. There's one found near Poitiers in France. Others from the one in Berlin, it was found in the one from Bavaria, and the one in Berlin, actually the provenance is very iffy. It did not appear on the global art market until the mid-90s. Some private collector had got it through unspecified, possibly unscrupulous means, but it's believed to have been found in Swabia or even Switzerland. So, and there's only four of these things.
Who are the so what era are they from?
So when you look at this thing, you cannot tell what area. If you had told me this was some Art Nouveau thing that Klimt had worked up in his workshop, I would believe it because it's very intricately filigreed with all these little bands and designs of a very kind of perfect and careful geometric workmanship. You could have told me it was Renaissance. The whole thing is not quite a perfect cone.
Right.
I assume because hammered gold sheets are very soft and light. But on a micro scale... The detailing looks perfect. It's like you're looking at a Borg spaceship up close or something.
Right.
But from far away, the cone is kind of organic, like it's been formed by coral or lava or something. It might have been Renaissance. The best guess we have now is that these are late Bronze Age.
Wow.
From around 1000 BC.
And was there a unified European peoples or cultures in the Bronze Age?
We know very little about this proto-Celtic people.
Well, we don't know who they were or what they were doing.
It is kind of the thing where we don't know who they were or what they were doing. They're called the Urnfield culture because we found some of their urns in a field.
Right.
Like, that's literally all we know. Like, we found one piece of garbage. Like, if the future finds a piece of Kleenex, like, then we're part of the Kleenex civilization.
Well, what will they call? What will futurelings call us?
What are they going to find more than anything else?
The Ken and Jones era.
They're going to know about us, so it'll be the Omnibus era. It'll probably be the AOL CD era. They're going to find tens of millions of those in landfills. We're the AOL CD people.
But so this is 1,000 or 2,000 years after Stonehenge.
Right. We should not be surprised that there were mystics wandering Europe doing mystic pagan things, but it is the workmanship of it is surprising, and the fact that
the wide distribution of this, which seems right. like a religious artifact or some kind of cultural thing.
And yet the people were widespread enough to cover much of what is modern France, Germany, and possibly Switzerland. And just the fact that they did a nice job with it.
Yeah, I mean, beautiful.
We have really come to understand that Europe at this time was not famous for its for being at the forefront of world civilization. Like, if you had found one of these in Assyria or in Egypt from 1000 BC, you'd be like, sure, they were doing amazing things with gold. But, you know, Europeans were just, you know, pooping in the lake in 1000 BC. It was a dumb Kevin's era. And so even if King Solomon is building his temple in Jerusalem, or if Sparta is being founded in Greece, we don't expect there to be amazing workmanship coming out of Germany and France at this time, countries that did not even exist.
Well, for those of you at home in your future land who like to see phallic symbols in everything that stands tall.
It's got to be everybody.
Because no matter what constitution futurelings have, surely they will either have penises or worship them.
Like, if they don't, they'll have a civilization-wide case of, what is it called? Electra syndrome? Is that the one? They're going to see they'll see the Voyager probe with the naked dude, and they'll be like, oh, people used to have penises.
Oh, penises.
Those were the days.
So,
do you find it phallic when you look at the gold hat?
Well, no, but I'm always struck. I always go back to the Venus of Willendorf or Willendorf.
Everybody goes back to the Venus of Willendorf.
The Venus of Willendorf is the thing where I say, how does this relate to the Venus of Willendorf?
Is that your type? Is that your physical type, the Venus of Willendorf?
So one time many years ago, I was outside of Vienna. I was walking along the Danube and came – I was walking along sort of just on a stroll. And then there was a naked person. And I thought, interesting. Well, it is Austria. And people do things differently here. And then I walked a little further, and there was another naked person.
Of all ages and genders?
Well, there's only two in my story so far, so they couldn't have been of all ages and genders.
They could be of all genders. No, that's not true. That's not very woke of me to say at all. I would have
met tens and tens of people by then. And then I walked a little further, and then there was a little gathering of naked people. And pretty soon I realized that this little stretch of the path between Vienna and outlying areas was a nudist beach, but on a river, a nudist river beach.
A riparian beach.
And I had not, at that time, been to, and I still haven't, been to that many nudist events. And so, and I was fully clothed, and I was on my way somewhere. I was not at liberty to say, like, well, I guess I'll take my clothes off too, since that's what we're doing.
You had an appointment.
I had a place to be. And so, after not very much further, I was surrounded by naked people. There were hundreds and hundreds.
Were they jeering at you for wearing clothes?
No, they were doing what, you know, every nudist kind of wants you to understand, that what they were doing was just normal stuff, like grilling hot dogs and
volleyball. There's a lot of volleyball.
Volleyball and just sitting, sunbathing.
The former East Germany had a ton of nudism, by the way.
Nudism.
Naturism. They called it. Like, it was a very common vacation thing. It was like the thing the state couldn't control. They couldn't make you wear shorts on vacation.
Right, especially if you're ostensibly an atheistic society, it's hard to put a moral, like, kibosh on being nude.
Right.
But anyway, as I walked through this crowd, I noticed, I think for the first time, you know, when you first see naked human beings in proliferation, it's shocking. And then it very, very quickly becomes commonplace. I mean, after 10 minutes of walking through this big crowd of nakeds, I was like, oh, right. Why am I wearing clothes? Clothes are dumb. Look how naked everybody is. It just seems fine.
You're easy to convince.
I'm not, you know, it's not like I'm
just following orders.
But I was struck by how many people have the physique, a share of physique with the Venus of Willendorf.
Which is a famous fertility sculpture that I'm sure predates the gold hat by thousands of years.
Well, so it apparently was made in 30,000 BC.
Whoa, tens of thousands of years.
Which is bonkers, right? I mean, there are very, very few.
It's also surprisingly
things that old.
It's a surprisingly good piece of art.
pretty good little piece of art.
30,000 years old.
But she, the Venus, is wearing a kind of head dress.
It looks like one of those crocheted caps you can get at a comic book convention that looks like R2-D2 or some kind of fruit.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's like the hat that Billy Gibbons wears to convince us he's not going bald.
Right.
But it seems filigreed in the same way, slightly differently, but, you know, the golden cone hats.
There's a lot of detail on her hat.
Yeah.
I've never looked at her hat.
Her hat is where it's at.
Reveals a lot about
because you're
me.
Always looking at her belly button and her yeah. big butt. You like yeah. her big thighs.
Do you know, I hope the future is aware of the odd TV show, The Young Pope. On The Young Pope, there's a Catholic cardinal who's erotically obsessed with Venus of Willendorf.
Oh.
In the show, it's suggested that the Vatican owns the Venus of Willendorf, which is not true, and I don't know why they would.
Well, the Vatican takes all things, but no, it's in the Natural History Museum
in
Vienna.
It's in Vienna,
and I in subsequent visits to Vienna, I have not gone to see her, even though she plays this large role in my.
And even though you saw her flesh and blood equivalents on the banks of the Danube.
Well, and this was what I think. This is why it stuck out to me because I was within 15 miles of the Venus of Willendorf, walking on this nude strand, and was struck that 30,000 years later we looked the same, and it felt perfectly normal, perfectly natural. I should go back there right now and take off all my clothes.
You should go back in time 30,000 years.
Obviously, that's what I want to be doing.
Now that you've realized we're all the same.
Why am I here? You and I, you know, we, even when we shake hands, we're uncomfortable. I should be over there playing volleyball naked with the Venus of Willendorf.
We have, I don't know, I feel like she's going to need some kind of support for a game of volleyball.
The Venus of Willendorf.
Is that you? Are you the Venus of Willendorf?
Anyway, the gold cones.
The gold cones are a mystery because we know nothing of this culture. So everything we know about them is kind of detective work based on the circumstance of how we found it. The gold cones are typically found buried upright in the ground and filled with ash. So they've been intentionally buried there as a relic.
Oh. You know?
We didn't just find them cast off. They were placed into the ground at the end of their hat life. So they're preserved beautifully.
And placed in the ground cone up.
Yes, I believe that is correct. Cone up. They're a single sheet of gold leaf. So you're wondering, how did people make these in 1000 BC with the whatever lousy technology Central Europe had in 1000 BC? It's a single sheet of gold leaf. It's about half a millimeter thick for the most part.
Hmm.
And because gold is one of the lightest metals, these things, it's 3 feet tall, but it weighs less than a pound. These things weigh about 10 ounces.
Whoa.
And gold has such a low melting point that it would have been incredibly hard to make a sheet this thin and uniform and then to shape it into
how does it even support its own weight?
Right. It's I guess because it's very thin, gold is just hard enough not to sag.
Huh.
And so it must have been made in some kind of pottery kiln because a very high temperature would have melted the thing. So to work it without melting it, there's a very precise temperature range. So it would have been like a charcoal fire, like the way you would fire pottery.
Interesting.
With a bellows just to control the temperatures. And that's apparently what they did. Look, I made a hat where there never was a hat. When it was found, we did not know it was a hat, however. It was assumed for a while. The first ones to be found were assumed to be maybe ceremonial vases.
Right.
Or possibly vases, if it was a fancy archaeologist.
Or a waz, if we're doing the VW.
The Venus of Willendorf thing. Or it was believed maybe it was something that was kind of placed on a stake, like the top of a maypole or something for some kind of pagan worship. And it wasn't until the scholarship kind of realized that the opening is a very specific shape of oval, which precisely matches the shape of a human skull.
Wow.
That we realized maybe these dopists were wearing them on their heads. And in southern Sweden, in fact, a set of petroglyphs in a site called King's Cave. No gold hat was found there, but there is a picture of, among the hunter and other stick figures on the glyphs, there's a dude wearing a weird, tall, 3-foot hat as some kind of status symbol.
Really? And have we seen other artistic representations of the gold-hatted person?
No, I think that's it. And so that's our supposition, that people of power in that time did wear weird, tall hats as a show of rank. And then when studying the designs on the You should look at a close-up picture if you have it available in your air. There's a series of horizontal bands which have been made apparently by putting rolls of tree resin onto the gold and then hammering it, like, so it's embossed.
So this is the little dimpled bands?
Yeah, the run horizontally across the rows. But then between those rows, there are even more intricate designs, little circles and discs and other weird symbols.
Right.
Which are a kind of a weird perfection that have been apparently punched with cylindrical stamps, just kind of like the same way you would make a design out of a potato or whatever in first grade today.
Right.
Others are etched with combs, dragging combs along the surface, or maybe rolled with wheels to get a kind of a repeating design.
Yeah.
So basically it's the tools that would be in like a Play-Doh hair salon shop. These proto-Celtic people have developed to work gold and to put incredibly detailed and specific designs on the hat.
Uh-huh.
But why? Why would they do such a thing?
I mean, now picturing myself wearing this hat, I don't have to ask why.
You would be happy with any kind of elaborate design just as a style choice?
Just, you know, let your freak flag fly. I'm going to wear this hat no matter what you put on it.
I think it immediately, the specificity of the stuff on it calls attention to the fact that there's some kind of pattern or meaning encoded in the hat.
Right. They don't put, there's no birds on it.
It's not just what looked, yeah, it's not a put a bird on it hat. It's not just whatever looked good to the artisan. That something religiously or cultically important is going on there. And a series of discoveries in the 20th century have pretty well established that what the hat actually is a calendar.
Qua.
They're wearing a big calendar on their head. They didn't have day at a time far side calendars.
But this is a this is like a Mayan calendar, but it's a hat.
It's a lunisolar calendar you can wear on your head. That means that, you know, for each date on the calendar, it's encoded both where in the solar year it falls and also where in the lunar cycle it falls. So we can assume that this is some kind of sun-worshipping cult for whom the position of the sun and the moon in the sky had religious significance, beyond just the kind of survival significance you need to know what time of year it is for the crops or how bright the moon is going to be tonight for the hunt or whatever. You know, there's some, it seems like to me, I'm not my field, but it seems like there would be some kind of utilitarian purpose in knowing what the sun and moon are doing.
Well, I mean, anyone that has ever seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure or any other Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court knows that the real advantage is to be able to predict eclipses,
an eclipse,
so that you can then,
because if there's going to be one right on the day of your execution,
that's right, at exactly the time,
at exactly the right time, then you can scare the locals.
That's the whole point of astronomy, is to scare the locals.
But what if you're in prison and you find a scrap of newspaper telling you that an eclipse is coming, but it's actually several hours after? You're dead. You're done. Or even worse, there's a story in the paper that says no total solar eclipse predicted for today. You're like, oh, man.
Damn, if it was only... as this story unfolds, I am finding the word hat to be more and more ridiculous.
It's very funny. Now that we know that this is actually not just a religious artifact, but like a scientific one, right? Yeah. A calendrical artifact.
And we have nothing better to call it than hat.
And, you know, it's a gold hat.
It's a gold.
That's the term of art in the archaeological community.
Very tall. And so I'm reading this thing and it says, whether the hats themselves were indeed used for determining such dates. And I can't get past the word hats.
Are you, you have yet to suggest a replacement term. You see the problem.
Chapeau.
I guess one was found in France. At least one is a chapeau. If the theories are right about how the dates are encoded on the hat, then there are 59 different months restored on the Berlin hat.
Well, we know that to be untrue.
You think that's wrong?
Well, yeah.
That's 47 months off.
Yeah.
These yo-yos didn't even know.
59 months?
Well, the problem is a 12 lunar month calendar does not match up precisely with the 365-day solar year.
Right. We've covered this in under separate cover.
I think it was maybe the French Revolution entry in the omnibus.
Yeah.
So as we know, there's always going to be a problem when you try to get the moon and the sun to match up. Even the sun is not going to match up with an even number of days, so you need to create some kind of intercalary device, leap seconds, leap years.
You are describing my dating life.
Does it have lots of intercalary devices?
It's just
right
very
now?
Hard to get the sun and the moon to link up.
But with a 59-month calendar, I guess the idea is you could multiply that out into a 19-year increment, which we call the metonic cycle.
Is this something that we were aware of and using prior to this, or did we discover this through investigating the gold hats?
The ancient Greeks were aware of the metonic cycle, and basically anybody with a calculator can become aware of the metonic
cycle. Okay, all right.
It turns out, just because you haven't done it, John, come on. As you probably know, 19 solar years is the increment you would need to get the solar and lunar years to line up.
Right, to come back around.
19 solar years is almost precisely 235 lunar months to within just a matter of hours.
You know, what you're describing is a kind of polyrhythm.
Tell me what you mean by that.
If you had, you know, if you're...
Oh, I see. Two different time signatures played together.
Yeah, if your bass part was happening in the solar calendar and your drum part was happening in the lunar calendar...
Then the song needs to be 19 years long. It's a Rush song. And then it all works out. But it's the kind of thing where we're not actually clear what all the symbols mean. So there's a lot of supposition here. Like, we can't tell exactly what all the use cases of the hat are.
Do you think that they're also charting other celestial bodies? And now I'm asking you, what do we think, Ken?
I have not seen it. We're pretty sure the sun and the moon are encoded. Like, if the planets are there too, we don't know. Like, to get the math to work out right now, we have to assume that some of the symbols we can't interpret on each row mean that you need to add or subtract a certain amount of time.
Oh, I see.
It's basically the Raiders of the Lost Ark thing. You know, now subtract one cubit for the God of Israel whose hat this is. and if we make certain assumptions about those symbols, then the math kind of works, and we can assume that there was some powerful guy, some king priest in this cult, got to put on the hat. And he would be able to, because he's the guy with the hat, he would be able to say, yeah, you know, this is the month when the sun and moon do this, or we're still, you know, 20 full days away from the date when the moon is going to do the thing we like.
But you can't read the hat when you're wearing the hat.
He's the one guy who can't.
Right. So probably the guy in the hat had some priests or priestesses standing around reading the hat.
Or maybe you just put the hat on the dumbest guy. You know, dumb Kevin wears the hat, and everybody else who's smarter, you know, he's the one guy who wouldn't get anything out of it anyway.
The dumb, handsome guy.
Right.
Have we ever discussed how attractive dumb Kevin is? I bet he's a pretty... I mean, Kevin is the name of an attractive guy.
Because if he can get away with pooping in the lake, you think he's in kind of an aesthetic bubble?
Yeah, right. It's just like, oh, dumb Kevin.
I can do whatever I want. But the curator of the Berlin Museum has said that, you know, he's imagining some kind of priest king wearing this thing. And because he's got the hat, he's regarded as a lord of time.
Oh, Lord.
He's Doctor Who.
Oh.
He has access. Basically, he has access to, because he's wearing the hat that has the numbers on it, you know, back in a pre-scientific time. To them, he's got access to the future. He's got divine knowledge that lets him know what's going to happen.
Wow.
And we can say, well, yeah, of course, duh, there's a Sudoku on the hat. But to them, it's much more bigger and mysterious and fraught and numinous that this one guy has this kind of ability. But you're right that none of this answers the essential question. Why does the calendar have to be a hat?
Does it have to be a hat, or do you want it to be a hat?
Well, look, we found the same kind of thing encoded in other kinds of artifacts. Like, Stonehenge is now believed to hold, you know, patterns related to the solstices in it. Like, the stones look a certain way when the sun is in a certain place, and that's what the druids – they're not druids. What right. The builders would have wanted.
But this is the type of thing that we imagine was knitted into or woven into a textile, and that would have been –
Sure. Why isn't it a tapestry? Why isn't it a set of stones? Why isn't it a series of mounds?
Sort of much easier to show up somewhere with your – calendar blanket.
Well, not necessarily a hat. You can just put on your head. You've got your hands free.
Look at these hats.
The blanket you have to carry.
You can't walk around in one of these hats. There's not a doorway in the ancient world you could get through.
And anybody sitting behind you would be like, sir, could you Could you please, would you mind removing that? So like, why, I mean, is it because it's close to the head? Like, would they have recognized that the head is the seat of consciousness?
It points at the sky like a penis.
I guess that's true. It's the part of you that's the closest to the sun, which is your god.
Right. We don't know if the sun is their god. They may be moon worshippers. They may not take a side. This hat may just be like
they're going to teach the controversy.
They're going to teach.
Maybe the sun god brings us the crops. Maybe it's the moon goddess.
Sure.
We don't know. I think there's a lot of assumption that it is a sun god, just because they would have known that, you know, in years with the sun, that's when the crops are good, and the sun's the brightest thing. And there's a lot of sun-like imagery on the hat.
Well, right, but going back to the weenus of Willendorf.
You keep going back to your weenus.
I feel like 30,000 years ago, we already knew how to make a statue of a sexy lady. By the time it's 1,000 years BC, like 29,000 years later, I don't think people are like, whoa, the sun is the big god. You know, they're like onto some other stuff. They might just be riding in gold hats, but... But I'm starting to believe that they're more sophisticated than we're giving them credit.
It's interesting that it took fully 29,000 years to get from the first sexy lady to the first time you could put something on your head and tip it and say, "M'lady."
And that concludes Gold Hats, entry 537.PS2103. Certificate number 23490 in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are archived at Omnibus Project. Before I go any further, though, I would like to remind you that we are an independent, networkless podcast who have ventured out into the wilds of the podcast ecosystem.
Away from our former overlords.
That's right. Or, you know, or the away from the warm bosom of the of our corporate masters. Well, that's, I was trying to rephrase it, but it sounds about the same. Anyway, we're all...
Except yours has boobs now.
We're all, well, it's away from the weenus of the iHeartMedia empire.
The warm, comforting... Life nourishing teats of our former home.
All of a sudden, Ken and I, who were up until this point nominally independent contractors for a large media corporation, after much ado, are now
just two guys at a table.
Just two independent operators sitting here in the Northwest waiting for the blood wave. Anyway, go to support our show, become a member and a donor. We're promising you no tote bag. That's our promise to you. Join at the highest level you're comfortable. No, I'm sorry. Join one level higher than you're comfortable.
Do one thing every day that scares you, as Eleanor Roosevelt said. Contribute to one Patreon that scares you. And we will appreciate people who are early adopters of our donor model.
You're going to get in on the ground floor.
Because we are still figuring out how the different tiers and the perks associated therewith are going to work. But there is certainly nothing to be lost by going in early and showing your character and integrity by saying, you know what? I'm not in this for any kind of bonus content.
Thank you.
I'm just, are you thinking the hypothetical person whose voice I'm doing?
Thank you, person.
Thank you, person Ken is doing.
Thank you, supporter.
I just want to support this enterprise that has given me so much joy.
So much joy. I feel like when the identity cards finally come out, your membership number is going to be important. When you're lining up to get on the interstellar barge.
There's a few funny numbers, and we could arrange for you to have one of them.
Ooh, at the right donor level, you could be pi.
Do you want to be 58,008? It's pretty funny upside down.
You know what? I feel like I'm going to take 42. I'm just going to take it right off the table.
John just loves geek culture. You're such a nerd.
I'm not. I'm the cool one. Anyway, so go to patreon.com/omnibusproject and give generously. Also, you can go to Twitter, where Ken is constantly riling people up with his ribald sense of humor.
Not lately. I'm kind of burned out.
At Ken Jennings. Even burned out, he's funnier than 98% of the people you follow on
Twitter.
That's
because they're all bots.
And I am at John Roderick. I post less frequently on Twitter because it takes so much time to take all of the selfies that I have to send out to my Patreon subscribers who subscribe one at a time.
They get the best ones.
They do.
And the remainder go on Instagram.
I am on selfsame Instagram at John Roderick. Please email us any questions or comments. Now that we're an independent show, of course, we're much more answerable to our listeners.
We're so accessible now. You own us and not the man.
So email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com and go to the fan group, The Futurelings on Facebook, who will almost certainly be in an absolute tizzy about this most recent transition to independence. They are The Futurelings on Facebook. Plus, you can mail us things, congratulatory letters.
A postcard about the Austin Moon Towers. That's what I'm looking at now from
Garments.
Of Dazed and Confused fame.
If you're going to send us anything, Ken is a perfect medium, a men's medium, and I am an imperfect extra large. Our P.O. Box is 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155.
What constitutes an imperfect extra large? Do you have weird kind of lumps or bulges?
No, I just, I'm just...
Are you sometimes a large and sometimes an XL?
No, I'm an imperfect person and I would never use the word perfect to describe myself. But I can describe you as perfect.
I am actually, in fact.
But I always chip the porcelain just a little bit to make it seem human.
Out of respect for Allah.
Yeah, that's right.
Listeners, from our vantage point here in the distant past, we have no idea how long our AOL CD civilization will survive. We hope and pray that some world-ending catastrophe will never befall us. But should the worst come soon, this very recording could be our final word to you. Gold hats. It just all ends with gold hats. But we hope that Providence will allow us to return to you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.